It is Thursday, is that correct? December 14th, and I'm Josh Newton, and I'm here with Dr. John Stalwart, the author of the book The Serving Leader, and several other books, including With and 10,000 Horses, and are there any other ones?
There are. There's a book called The Serving Leader for the People of God. There's a sequel to The Serving Leader, not yet published. There's a book on how to grow people that I published 20 years ago, and there's an unpublished novel.
Very cool. So lots of books being authored by Dr. John Stalwart, and we also work together at a company called the Newton Institute, and all of our leadership and development training is actually based on the intellectual property that John put together in The Serving Leader. So we are on the road to Indianapolis to have some business meetings here and a nice dinner tonight, as far as I understand. And we've been talking about a lot of different things. We've actually been on and off the phone. And one of the questions I said I was going to pose to John, and I wanted to record it for the podcast here, is why do you think self-awareness is hard? Why do people struggle with the idea of self-awareness?
Well, so there are multiple answers to this question that are all true, and let me just step into one of them to begin, and we can unpack this in several rounds. We're really complicated in our design. We are multifaceted, and the first thing that comes to my mind in answer to your question, Josh, is that it's hard for us to become self-aware because many observations are made about us from early childhood that, while true, aren't the most important observations to be made about us. And let me be more specific. When we're little and when we're in school, the most obvious thing our parents or our teachers see is what we're good at. And so we get tons of, wow, you are really good at that. And we're desperate, not only when we're little, we're desperate for affirmation that helps us get some direction for our life. And we tend to latch on to those things and do more of those things people notice that we're good at. And then we miss a lot of important things that are also true about us, such as, I'm not necessarily excited about doing some of the things that I'm good at. And so that kind of feedback, which is easy, you know, to latch onto, can cause us to become deaf or blind to other things about ourselves that we ought to know about. Like, you know, what makes me feel alive when I do it? Or what do I love to do? Or what gives me energy when I do it? So that's one answer. We get feedback that we're desperate to get ever since we're little that tends not to be complete. And so we can get distracted by that feedback, and then we can miss other aspects about who we are that we ought not miss.
That's interesting, because it actually brings up something that I've talked about with people when I do some of the assessment work that I do and a little bit of coaching around that. And you know, a lot of people are trying to figure out, you know, what's my passion, what's my calling, and I just did this with actually a friend of ours the other day who came through facilitator training and said, you know, you have to draw three circles to actually figure out what your calling is. And, you know, this is definitely not original. I definitely didn't think this up. One of them is, what are you good at? One of them is, you know, what do you love to do? And the other one is, what does the market actually care about, or what can you make money at? Because if you love it and you're good at it, but the market doesn't care, that's a hobby. If you love it and if you love it and the market cares about it, but you're not good at it, that's a pipe dream, right? And if you are good at it and the market cares about it, but you don't love it, that's just a job. And so that's definitely not something that's your calling in that sense.
So I want to just ask you, Josh, the last time I heard the framework of those three overlapping circles was probably 15 years ago. I was talking to a friend named John Poutsier, and I wonder if you had conversation with him. I know through your Vistage circle you may have met his wife. Is this a common link that you and I have with Mr. Poutsier? He wrote a book called Weirdos in the Workplace probably 20 years ago, in which he unpacked some of this.
It is not. I actually was introduced to that by an old boss of mine, and actually somebody who used to work for my dad's company. And I forget why he actually introduced that to me in that context, but I just thought it was really interesting, and it kind of solves that, or it actually brings up the three questions you kind of have to answer when you're looking at something to say, is this something I should be doing? And it stuck with me, and it's kind of really tied into a lot of the work I've been doing lately. So,
well, let me throw two more answers out to your question about why it's hard for us to have self-awareness. And the second one is that we do get stuck in ruts. Going back to John Poutsier, he worked for a company many years ago called PPG, and he was responsible for outplacement of about 5,000 people that got laid off. And this is what kind of dug him into asking new questions about how do you help someone, you know, move from a job they've kind of been in the rut of for a long time to finding a new place for themselves. And the fascinating thing that John discovered is that this getting fired, this getting pink slipped, was almost universally the best thing that happened to these people, because it interrupted a long rut in which they knew what they knew and they did what they did and they were comfortable with all of that, and it kept them away from awareness around some of the deeper issues of their sense of life and calling. And so we get in a rut. And let me throw one more onto the list. I have watched this for years and years, we have a hard time seeing the things that we are most naturally designed for, because it flows from us seamlessly, smoothly, easily. You and I, Josh, were talking about this an hour or two ago in one of our phone calls, and I've watched this again and again as I've watched Succession, you know, a founder of an organization passing the organization on, who often has not prepared the future to do the critical things the founder did, because the founder couldn't imagine needing to prepare the future to do those things because it had just come so naturally for them. It's tough to become self-aware when the best of us is happening effortlessly. And so we're aware of what's hard, but we're not nearly as aware of what goes smoothly. And you know, the data of what is it that flows out of us smoothly tends to escape our notice. So that would be another one. The things that are easy for us are important for us to know about, but they don't tend to catch our attention. We don't get yelled at by the boss. It doesn't run up the flagpole of our consciousness when we're in our flow.
Yeah, that's a good point. And one of the reasons, I guess one of the things that's come up for me when I've talked about this with people is that we spend our entire day watching other people, not watching ourselves. You know, our eyes and our ears are attuned outward, not necessarily inward. And so there's a very logistical reason why I think sometimes self-awareness is difficult. And to your point, we naturally look at and admire and pay attention to, because it catches our attention, the things that other people do that we can't. And so it's actually easier to identify somebody else's strengths and to really understand how somebody else is hardwired. And it's much harder for us to do that for ourselves, just again for those very logistical reasons of the fact that we're watching other people on a daily basis. We're watching other people day in and day out. We're not watching ourselves. All right, so first of all, thank you, John, for being willing to do this. We've been we've been in the car for a while and we've been talking for a while, but thank you again for just being part of this and answering that interesting question for us. Before I let you go, continue to navigate us to our dinner meeting, what do you think your top three strengths are? Or I guess maybe not even what do you think they are, what are they?
So my top three strengths are in the area of vision, being able to anticipate where things are heading in the future and to get sight lines of pursuit for that. I have a strength in quickly being able to establish rapport and empathy with people. My discernment and my empathetic skills are strong, and so I can build trust quickly, and I can quickly understand what people are going through and find points of common cause that allow them to open up with me. And third, I have a strength in the area of finding words. It sounds funny to say it this way, but whether I'm speaking or writing, that open pathways for the people I'm talking with to make progress. I quickly discern where the sticking points are for people that I'm spending time with, and I'm able to use language and words and stories to shift their imagination and their thinking and their perceptions in ways that create flow and encouragement and positive momentum for them.
Very nice. Last question. What is something that you're responsible for or is part of your role right now that doesn't align with your strengths or one of your innate abilities?
Well, this one's really interesting. People who study strengths for a living recognize that the detail level of each person's unique differentiators around strengths are quite acute. And so I'm going to give you a micro detail. This is why we really have to pay attention to our strengths down to the fine points of it. I am not wired to take initiative. I'm wired to be pliant and to be adaptive, and I'm wired to let others lead, and I don't want to impose. But I do a lot of business development where I need to get on the phone and talk with people about ways in which we can be of service to them in their lives. As soon as the phone call is live, I'm in the center of my strength part. And so there's no drain. I love the conversations with people that I'm doing business development with. But the act of dialing the number it runs counter to my hardwiring. I've had a private joke running for years that it would be smart for me to hire someone just to dial the number and then hand me the phone, because the moment the number is dialed, I'm from a weakness to a strength. But I can lose a half day of not wanting to dial the doggone number. This is nuts, and yet it illustrates just one dimension of strength and weakness. I don't want to impose on people. And interestingly, Josh, every time I call someone, 100% of the time I call someone, my first sentence is, "Hey, Bob, man, thanks for picking up the phone. Listen, is this a convenient moment for you?" And I cannot begin the conversation without clearing the deck on that because of my discomfort around imposition in the way that I'm wired.
Very cool. So that is a great example of somebody who's very aware of their strengths, very aware of their weaknesses or places where they're not leveraging their innate abilities. So thank you again, Dr. Stalwart. And if you're up for it, I'd love to have you on the station on the show again.
Love to.
As always, guys, I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Leave me a call in, give me a comment on the episode, and shoot me any questions, especially if there's any for John. I'll get those over to him, and we'll get his responses back. Thanks, guys.